Title of my message is The Minority. And with more than 7 billion people in the world, we have seen that some of the minorities are letting their voices be heard, but it's not necessarily in a good way. For example, we have different minority groups in society today, like the LGBT community. We also have the same-sex marriages. And this is something that the Bible clearly prohibits. And you can compare Leviticus 18:22, where it says, "You shall not lie with the male as with the woman. It is an abomination." But we have scriptures that are not just in the Old Testament, but also in the New Testament. For example, Romans 1:26 and 27, saying that this kind of behavior is shameful. And 1 Corinthians 6:9, saying that this is considered unrighteous, and such a person will not inherit the kingdom of God. There's other groups. Racial tension has increased. I mean, that's been a historical thing anyway, but that has really increased today as well. And as we know about the Black Lives Matter a unit that came into more in light in the past couple years, and where they had demanded answers, but there are those minorities, even within those groups, that take it further by resorting to violence in revenge, thinking that this will vindicate the problem. But even this is wrong in God's eyes, as he says in Leviticus 19, 17, and 18, "You shall not hate your neighbor, nor take vengeance." Matthew 5, 21 and 22 says, "Anger that leads to murder and violence is also wrong." And Proverbs 3:31 states that, "Do not envy the oppressor and choose none of their ways." Even a simple thing of anger, if not controlled, can get that far. And we have seen how minority groups in today's society have gained more attention, and society as a whole is on edge. Now everyone can be a witness through our technical devices and advancements through social media. And it seems that everyone needs to be aware of everything they say or do to avoid offense. Everybody is being watched. Everybody has a phone. Can easily just record something and post it. Especially for those who are famous, they're always on watch, even more so. And that's because we are living in a sensitive era. Certain minorities are drawing attention to themselves, but for the wrong motives. Fear and worry are increasing and tension is building up. This is the life we are living in today. So what about those of us in the Church of God? We are also considered a minority group because we believe in something that the vast majority of the world does not. Our beliefs are not in line with what most professing Christians believe, especially when it comes to some of the most obvious commands in the Bible, like keeping the Sabbath and keeping his holy days, not celebrating man-made pagan holidays of this world. The world does not understand because they haven't been called. Instead, society is finding more reasons to accept what is biblically wrong, opening a bigger door for Satan to continue with his destruction, while making it increasingly difficult for true Christians to live God's way of life. Now, this can be difficult at times, and we could be singled out, and we can feel all alone when things are really bad. But it is not impossible, for we in God's church have come this far. We are still here today, doing what we're supposed to be doing. We've been through the challenges as we try to live a life pleasing to God with diligence, by not giving up or giving into that which is against what God says and what the Bible teaches. I think back to when I was at Imperial Schools through Worldwide Church of God, and I was able to play sports, and that was such a blessing because that was at a time where you didn't have to worry about the Sabbath or the holy days because everybody kept that when playing games on those days. That was nothing we never had to worry about. But that all changed, however, when the school closed And then my family and I, we moved here to San Diego, and I had to make a transition to a public school. Here I came from a school that was less than 100 people. I'm talking about a school that was less than 100 people at Imperial, to around 2,000 here. Talk about being a minority. I didn't know anybody else in that school that believed what I believed. Like keeping the Sabbath, for example. Yeah, there could have been some, but at least keeping the Sabbath and the holy days, I was the only one. I recall going to an open gym night shortly after moving here for basketball at my new high school. I had really nothing else to do, so I wanted to do that at least because that's what I was used to. That's what I did back in Imperial. But not knowing that many of the players there were actually on the basketball team, and the coach happened to be there as well. Well, long story short, I made an impression on the coach, and he asked me to come to tryouts. That was really exciting. I didn't know anybody. And here a coach of the basketball team comes up to me and says, you know, I really like what you're doing. I like how you're playing. Why won't you come to tryouts? Well, it was very exciting, but it was extremely short-lived when I then asked how the game schedule would look like. Well, immediate disappointment set in, since every game would take place on a Friday night. And that was something that wasn't even a factor to consider when playing basketball or any sport at Imperial. And this was now a whole new experience at this anti-Sabbath keeping school. So, a choice had to be made. What was I going to do? Well, obviously I chose not to play. But this was now going to be the first thing I questioned if I was going to play another sport. Is the Sabbath going to be the decision maker? Now, fortunately, sifting through all the sports that they had at the school, I was able to play volleyball since the majority of the games did not take place on the Sabbath. However, if we were good enough and we were to make the playoffs, a Saturday game would have been a strong likelihood. Now, after making the team, and I waited for that, after making the team, I did tell the coach that I wouldn't be able to play or practice any games on the Sabbath if that were to occur. And he had no problem with that. Of course, as you can guess, we did make the playoffs. And the very first game, I believe, was a Saturday game, which I could not partake in. I then had to remind the coach of that. He was not very happy, especially since I was starting setter. So now they had to come up with a backup plan. But things after that, I got a little bit more. I didn't really get to play all as much as I was before when we were playing the playoff games. Buddy didn't kick me off, so that was great. But at least, you know, I held my ground, and we did manage to make it to the championships. So that part was at least exciting. But I knew that this was going to be a challenge from here on out. And I had dreams of actually playing in college basketball or volleyball team when I was younger. You know, when you were in Imperial, you didn't think about that really being an option of having the Sabbath really be a decision maker and a real challenge. But those dreams that I had of playing college, if it was this bad already in high school, were pretty much over, since challenges of the Sabbath would be an issue, and that was just not the only thing. I mean, I took a basketball class, and when I did go to college, just to take a class, at least to play or something, and the same scenario happened again, like it did in high school. The person that taught that class was the coach of the basketball team, and there were several players in there too, and same thing came up. But this was less of an issue since I got hurt anyway, and I was out for that whole, you know, whatever, the whole semester. Perhaps it was God giving me an easier way out rather than having to deal with the stress of, let's say, you know, having to play, continue playing, whatever, and not having the Sabbath then be an issue. You know, the love of just playing the game is overshadowed by constant stress and pressure. And this was something I had been faced with the rest of my life. And I am still faced with it. And it's not just with sports. It's with everything. Work, music, playing in a band, friends, etc. It doesn't matter. Even with friends you hang out, Sabbath is going to come up. Or are you observed, we're going to a party, a Halloween party, Easter, Christmas, whatever it may be. And this really sets us apart from the rest of the world. Sure, I had thoughts of what it would be like if I wasn't in the church. Maybe we all have had. It's like, I wonder what it would be like, you know, if I lived like everybody else I knew lived like, wouldn't have to worry about those things and just do everything that everybody does anyway. And if the Sabbath wasn't an issue, where I could actually be a professional athlete or even be a musician. But even there, the world has changed. Now there are other challenges that athletes and musicians are faced with, having to abide by the rules their organizations they play for or are associated with. Again, it's not just about the love of the game or the love of music anymore. There is now a new type of minority in the world today, another new meaning on those who are singled out because of a decision they make whether they want to be vaccinated or not. And this takes a toll on how the overwhelming society thinks, especially against those who choose not to do so. Due to constant pressure from the government, from employees and coworkers, friends and family, social media, many who are just undecided or fearful then choose to get vaccinated, even though they may have questions, concerns, indifferences on getting it due to the fact that many reports state that this is still in experimentation phase, not knowing for sure if there are any long-lasting side effects. And obviously, it isn't considered a cure, since it's still recommended that you socially distance, wear masks, continue to get booster shots, etc., etc., etc. Well, I wanted to focus on a story written back on October 3rd by the senior editor of Yahoo Sports News with an article entitled Following the Science. You may have heard about this. It hit the news pretty big. And I'm focusing on the NBA, National Basketball Association, of a particular player who was really in the spotlight on his decision. So the article is called Following the Science? Question mark. The NBA, which kicked off its preseason, is in a bit of a vaccine war with some of its players, so of course, let's talk about science. NBA science tells us that non-fully vaccinated players are prohibited from dining in the same space as vaccinated players. They have to socially distance from them during team activities, including in the locker rooms before and after games, and that all players must wear masks while at team facilities and during travel. NBA science also tells us that all of these protocols are suspended once games begin, when vaccinated and non-fully vaccinated players can take the same court, grab the same ball, guard the same paint, bang into each other, sweat on each other, breathe heavily on each other, hug, slap hands, and basically do whatever they want. That's following the science, according to the NBA. You're probably not surprised by this. It's hardly a wonder how we got here. Local ordinances dictate that at my local coffee shop, I must stand in line with a mask on next to all the others standing in the line with masks on. While just a few feet away, everyone's already gotten their coffee, is allowed to sit, their laptops open, their masks off, eating, drinking, and being merry. That's following the science, according to certain local government officials, some of whom are now requiring vaccination to enter certain public spaces. This is going to be a problem for the roughly 5% of NBA players who to this point have not been vaccinated. Put simply, they're not going to be able to play in New York City or San Francisco. Now, this was the beginning of October. Actually, not sure how far it has gotten yet, but I know in those two cities, that's still the case. So anybody who's on those teams are not allowed to play. If you're not vaccinated, are not allowed to play there. But if you happen to be in another team in another city, that's fine. So then Yahoo News reported the very next day, October 4th, the NBA and its players union have agreed to terms on financial penalties for players who miss home games as a result of violating local COVID-19 vaccine mandates in New York and San Francisco. Unvaccinated players on the New York Knicks team, the Brooklyn Nets team, the Golden State Warriors will lose a percentage of their salaries for each home game they miss the season. The only player known to potentially be in violation of laws mandating vaccination for large indoor events is Kyrie Irving, whose reported anti-vaccination stance kept him from attending the Nets Media Day activities, and he is under contract for $34.9 million just for that season. And each missed game would cost him roughly over $381,000. Now, should he miss all 41 regular season home games, he would be penalized a total of $15.6 million. So he had not explicitly said whether he was vaccinated or not, but his aunt told Rolling Stone that her nephew was morally opposed to the vaccine in the publication's bombshell report on the anti-vaccination contingent within the National Basketball Players Association. So in that article by Rolling Stones on September 25th, with the title, NBA's Anti-Vaxxers Are Trying to Push Around the League and It's Working, they say that conspiracy theories in the locker room, they mask police in the arena, superstars are trying to avoid the shot. After bringing back the culture from COVID, basketball confronts its own civil war. Now, Kyrie Irving, he's not just some player. And he's also a vice president of the National Basketball Players Association. He was the only player under guaranteed contract who did not join his teammates in Brooklyn for Media Day. And this 29-year-old, seven-time All-Star, did not rule out the possibility of getting vaccinated prior to the start of the season. So at that point, more than 95% of the players were vaccinated. And the New York Knicks, have reported a 100% vaccination rate on that team. So there were a few players, not just Irving, but there were others, that also reportedly were in violation of mandates in New York and San Francisco at the start of training. And the NBA also denied another player's request for religious exemption before announcing last week players would not be paid for violating local laws. And this faced stiff financial penalties. And unfortunately, I mean, he received them the vaccine because of the constant pressure, because he didn't want to lose out on the money, which would have been $344,000 per game had he not played. But no, he went forward and did it. Didn't want to lose that. Now, there was another player who played for the Orlando Magic's forward. His name is Jonathan Isaac, and he is one of those unvaccinated players. And he gave a measured explanation for his decision not to be vaccinated, explaining that he has had COVID, that his antibodies and that his age group at 23 years old and fitness level made him less fearful of the disease. He also explained that while it's rare, getting jabbed could open him up having an adverse reaction to the vaccine itself. Yeah, it may be rare, but it is a possibility. He is known less by the average basketball fan, but he is deeply religious and proudly unvaccinated. When the NBA player started lining up for shots in March, he started studying Black history, watching Donald Trump's press conferences. He learned about antibody resistance and came to distrust Dr. Anthony Fauci. He looked out for people who might die from the vaccine, and he put faith in God. He said, at the end of the day, it's people. And you can't always put your trust completely in people. And Isaac considers unvaccinated players to be vilified and bullied, and he thinks it's an injustice to automatically make heroes out of vaccinated celebrities. He rejects the NBA's proposal for a vaccine mandate and social distancing for players like him during the team travel. He said, you can play on the same court. We can touch the same ball. We can bump chests. We can do all those things on the court. And then when it comes to being on the bus, we have to be in different parts of the bus. To me, it doesn't seem logically consistent. Now, you can think about back in the 50s or 60s when there was racial tension. Now look how that's all happening again, but in a different way. So for that, he's being labeled an anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist because, you know, the science. And what does the science say about the antibodies as it relates to COVID? Are they, in fact, 27 times more likely than the vaccine itself to prevent symptoms and 8 times better at preventing hospitalization, as an Israeli study of 2.5 million people showed? That question was asked, and Health and Human Services Secretary answered, "I'm not familiar with that study." And then Fauci told CNN last month, "I don't really have a firm answer for you on that. That's something we're going to have to discuss regarding the durability of antibodies versus a vaccine." 19 months in, and the people providing guidance to an entire nation either aren't familiar with or don't have a firm answer on COVID study involving 2.5 million people. And by the way, last I checked, Dr. Fauci said boosters for the vaccine are inevitable. So how durable are they? This author who wrote this is not an anti-vaxxer, but he did get the vaccine. He was just pointing out common sense. He finishes off by saying, "If the COVID discussion is not going to make sense at the highest level, then we shouldn't expect it to when it trickles down to the local and organizational levels, such as the NBA. Why aren't we allowing critical thinking to take its course? Why shut down conversation about any potential remedy or therapeutic? Why are some among us so adamant about putting all our eggs in one basket, especially when that one basket has led us to a science that dictates the vaxxed and unvaxxed basketball players must social distance before and after games, but can swap sweat for the 48 minutes in between?" I thought it was a very well-written article, and it makes a lot of sense with the questions he's asking and what he all said in there. And there's so much confusion out there. On October 14th, Forbes magazine, going further on with Kyrie Irving and his decision and the constant pressure he was under, he said that Irving confirmed that he was unvaccinated against COVID-19, arguing that nobody should be forced to do anything with their bodies, while asserting he still hopes to return and play for the Nets at some point. He said, "I know the consequences here, and if it means that I'm judged and demonized for that, that's just what it is. That's the role I play, but I never wanted to give up my passion, my love, my dream just over this mandate. Who would have ever thought when he started playing basketball that something like this would be a deciding factor if he was going to play or not?" The very next day, Yahoo Sports columnist Dan Wetzel, who's a New York Times best-selling author, wrote, "Kyrie Irving is refusing to shut up and dribble." Now, this is a term that was used out there. I believe even Trump even said that. But a lot had said that. He's like, "You know what? Be quiet. Just play the game. Do what they're telling you to do." But he wasn't going to do that. So the author here then says, good for him. This is still America, or so it says on the door. It doesn't matter what his opinion is. He's free to express it. And, of course, embrace the consequences. In this case, he has declined to get the COVID-19 vaccine. That puts him at odds with New York City local government, where he'd be unable to play. Since Irving is playing for that team, he's stuck. Now, that basketball team, the Nets, uninterested in having a part-time player, even a 7-time All-Star player, said he can't begin the season with them. So a guy is willing to walk away from a real NBA title contender, not to mention $34.9 million salary and a $186 million extension due to his convictions. He is making an individual choice. The Nets had made their individual choice. New York City government made its choice. It's a tough break for his teammates, but that's life. It doesn't matter whether you agree with his stance on vaccines or not. Shut up and dribble should never be applied. This isn't a sliding scale. This isn't a situational guideline. The real world can't delve into dueling cable news idiocy where hypocrisy is just one commercial break. This is a grown man. He can do as he chooses. Irving said during an interview on that Wednesday, "Do you think I really want to give up my dream to go after a championship? Do you think I really just want to give up my job? You think I really just want to sit at home and not go after the things with my teammates that I've been able to grow with, to learn with?" Now, he's long been an advocate of social justice reforms. He's been involved a lot in the public. In the summer of 2020, he argued that the NBA shouldn't return to play after the unrest stemming from incidents of police violence. He donated $1.5 million to cover the lost salary of the WNBA players who chose to work in their communities rather than play. He also bought George Floyd's family a house. He produced a documentary about the death of Breonna Taylor at the hands of police in Louisville, Kentucky. In 2016, he joined the Native Americans from the Standing Rock Sioux in protesting the construction of an oil pipeline. Some people who wanted him to shut up and dribble on social issues then are now applauding him. Some people who raged at suggestions that NBA players should just entertain the masses and not express their opinions are now mocking him. In the end, the only one who is right about it all, the one standing in the middle of America's big revolving ball of double standards, is Kyrie Irving. His life, his career, his principles, like it or not, stupid or smart, this time or next. Now, this past Wednesday, November 3, Yahoo Sports reported that there's a chance an unvaccinated Kyrie Irving could still play for the Brooklyn Nets this season, but it would require New York to lift its COVID-19 vaccine mandate. If that happens, all of a sudden, now the Nets, the coach for the Nets, Steve Nash, would welcome Irving back to the club. Steve Nash made those comments following Eric Adams being elected as the new mayor of New York, who plans to revisit the vaccine mandates. Irving could wait until January to see what happens once Adam takes office. Until then, he will need to take the COVID-19 vaccine if he wants to return to the Nets, which he is not planning on doing. So look at that. Talking about a minority in the whole league, someone who's standing their ground. And now, you know, see if there's going to be a mandate revisit. So we'll just see what happens. You know, this is just one example that I wanted to focus on, but there are others out there in the same situation. All-star players who've been playing really, I mean, for several years, who are being criticized heavily for choosing not to get vaccinated, no matter what the reasons are, calling for their suspension or being kicked off the team after several years being on that team. And that's happening in every sport. The inconsistencies throughout. Who would have thought just a couple of years ago that you could lose your job over something like this? This also goes for musicians, doctors, firefighters, police. Really, it's any kind of job out there. Today, it's actually quite a relief after hearing all this and what everything is going on in the world. It's quite a relief that I am not a professional athlete or a musician having to go through another form of stress I wouldn't have expected to go through when I was younger. Didn't expect to be in the position that I am in today. As a minister giving this message to all of you. I didn't think it was going to happen when I was 16. That's not even close to what was on my mind of what I was going to do as a job. But you know, this really shows an importance of what it is that we are doing today. What we are to be focusing on. The whole purpose of why we are here in the first place. As a minority. Notice 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26 to 28. 1 Corinthians 1, and verse 26, we read, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise things, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. The base things of the world and the things which are despised God has chosen, and the things which are not to bring to nothing the things that are made." Are you proud to be in this category right here? I mean, you read this and it sounds like, wow, we're weak, we're base things. But that is not what God is talking about here. It's the few that God is choosing today, this minority, and there is a huge purpose for that. Sorry, I thought I lost the page. Okay. Who we are now are the select few that God has chosen. 1 Peter Chapter 2 and verse 9. 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." We are part of the future. And we can read about that in Daniel 7:27 and in chapter 12, verse 3. And we know that God is in control of our lives, the plans that he has, how he plans our lives, and nothing happens to us without his knowledge. Notice Psalm 37, verse 23 and 24. Psalm 37, in verse 23, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. Even when we slip and fall, even when we go through tough times, God is always there to help us back up. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 9. Proverbs 16, verse 9. A man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. We all have plans, but we have to be careful how we put our trust into these plans, because we have to let God direct our paths and let him do it. Also in Jeremiah 29, verse 11. Jeremiah 29, verse 11, for I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace, not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. By having God in our lives and obeying him and his commands, we are able to get through every trial that is set before us. James 1, verses 2 through 8, I'll just cite these. In James 1, verses 2 through 8, it talks about being joyful when going through trials and how the testing of our faith produces patience. So we come before God and we ask him in faith on anything, whatever it may be, without doubting. So you cannot ask him in faith and doubt at the same time. That's not going to work. But that's the key right there, is not to doubt. So pray in a way that God will answer whatever it is that you are asking him. In Proverbs 3, 5 to 6, talks about putting our trust in God and he will direct our paths. In 1 Corinthians 10, 13, saying that whatever trials that we go through, we must remember that these tests by God are able to be conquered. Who's not going to allow us to be tested beyond what we are able to overcome. And 1 John 4, 4 tells that we have to overcome them. Them meaning those false teachers in the world. And we are surrounded by them, no matter what it may be, no matter what we hear. It's false teachers that if they don't live by God's way, it's false what they tell you to do. Because we have God with us, who is greater than Satan. Always remember who these people, that the world, the politicians, or whatever it may be, who their God is. We know that times will get worse, and the only way they're going to get better is when Christ returns to put an end to this terrible day and age. And scriptures which talk about that, you can read in Zephaniah 1, verses 14 through 17, Joel chapter 2, verses 30 and 31, Matthew 24, verse 22 and 29 through 30. But the one I do want to turn to is 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verses 1 through 5. 2 Timothy 3, the last scripture. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1. But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. And from such people, turn away. Now, this is talking about a group of people in the last days. Do we see any of these? Do we see all of this in this day and age? Do we see this happening right now? Yes, we do. Are we approaching the last days? Yes, we are. So we know this is coming. And this is already happening right now. This is not a category we want to be in, which summarizes the vast majority in the world today. And because we know this, because this is, we're really coming up to the end times here, if we struggle with any of these in this list, we also need to make sure that we make the change to overcome this. We are the select few. We are the true minority. And whatever we do in our lives, whatever plans that we may have, we know what the future holds. So let's just put everything in God's hands and let Him lead our lives.